are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very, very first time. Welcome. I'm glad you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of this. Just a couple of real quick announcements, and then I want us to dive off into what we are going to be doing here tonight. I found this to be absolutely fascinating, and I think you will. I hope you will, and I know you'll let me know if you do or don't. A couple of quick announcements. First one, as always, the music you hear on The Kevin Smith Show is all independent music provided by the independent artist. Now, most of that music comes from either GarageBand.com or Music.Podshow.com. Some of it is sent to us directly by the artist. However, most of it comes from GarageBand.com or Music.Podshow.com. Now, we have had a couple of emails during the week where people said they tried to subscribe to the K-Files e-zine and couldn't. It wouldn't work for them. Well, we've fixed that page. As a matter of fact, it was working yesterday. I checked it again this afternoon, and it was working. So if you haven't subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, be sure you do, because the K-Files e-zine is our weekly newsletter. It's absolutely free. There are no strings attached. And, hey, you know, I don't rent our email list to someone or loan it to anyone or sell it. I don't. Now, a lot of shows do that. It's a source of revenue for them. We don't do that. I protect that. So you're not going to get spammed as a result of subscribing to the K-Files e-zine. So get over to kevinsmithshow.com and click on K-Files e-zine and subscribe. Be sure you do that. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. I don't know why you would want to, but you can. Here on this show, we very often talk about great mysteries. And, you know, not too long ago we talked about the mystery of Lake Vostok, right? You remember that? The mystery of Lake Vostok down in Antarctica. There are a lot of really, really mysterious places on this planet. Some of them very ancient mysteries. Tonight, we're going to be talking about one of the most mysterious events ever to take place on this planet. And it took place in rather modern history. By rather modern, I mean I wasn't alive when it happened, but we're not talking about, you know, 300, 400, 500 years ago, 1,000, 2,000 years ago. We're talking about 1908, and there have been some new developments in this case, in this mystery. It is the mystery of Tunguska, which is located in Siberia, which, of course, is part of the old Soviet Empire. We're going to take a look at it because, as I said, there are some new developments in this mystery. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and as I said, we're going to be talking about this very, very big mystery called Tunguska. Now, Tunguska is called Tunguska because this event happened near the Tunguska River. This is located in Siberia. Now, if you're not familiar with Siberia, get you a world map and take a look. It's up close to the top of the world. It is a very cold place. Dr. Bob, who is our producer, has actually lived in Siberia. He lived in Vladivostok back when he was also involved in international law enforcement. He was the... he was in charge of security at the American Embassy there in Vladivostok. He has traveled north from Vladivostok, and you would have to travel some distance north to get to Tunguska. But he has traveled north to very near where this took place. Not that he was looking for the Tunguska blast site. He went to a small city that's there, but he's been in that region, that area of the world. I have not. I've been in a lot of places around the world, but I've not been there. But let's go back to the year 1908. Let's go back to June 30th, 1908. Now, actually, according to their calendar, I think it would have been about June the 17th. They were not using the same calendar that we use today in that region in the world. But according to our calendar, it would have been June 30th, 1908. Now, in this region, farther than the eye could see, the vast Siberian forest stretched for hundreds and hundreds of miles. And they're mostly uninhabited in 1908, and they still are. In fact, there were hundreds of miles of pristine land upon which no human foot had ever walked, so far as we know, and that's still the case. Only a very few, very hardy souls made their homes in this vast forest land. As a matter of fact, most did not live in the forest land, but in the plains at the edges of the forest land. Now, as I mentioned, the date was June the 30th, 1908. The sun was already up. It was shining brightly. There were no clouds in the sky except for one small little dark cloud. This, however, was not going to be a normal day. People were, as rural people do, they were already up very early, and some of them having breakfast, some of them already in their fields. They thought it was going to be just like any other day, but it wasn't going to be just like any other day. There is some uncertainty about the time, but they've got it narrowed down pretty close. Somewhere between 7:14 a.m. and 7:17 a.m., the calm and beauty of northern Siberia was suddenly rocked and ripped apart. Some people recorded that they heard one explosion, some as many as four. Now, this was no ordinary explosion. This explosion was a 5-megaton explosion, an explosion 1,000 times more powerful than the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima a few decades later. And remember, so far as any of us know, there were no atomic bombs in 1908. Now, witnesses in the area, in the outlying areas, in the area of Lake Baikal, which is, by the way, Lake Baikal is one enormous anomaly. It is the deepest lake, freshwater lake, on this planet. And we've had Paul Stonehill on this show previously talking about some of the very anomalous things seen in and around Lake Baikal. But witnesses in the area of Lake Baikal saw a bluish column of light, which they said was almost as bright as the sun. Some of them described it as a second sun. About 10 minutes later, there was another flash and explosion, followed by what sounded to them like artillery fire. Now, witnesses who were a little bit closer said that the sound was moving from east to north. Then there was the shock wave, several shock waves, so strong that it knocked people off their feet, and it blew out windows in buildings. This blast registered 5.0 on the Richter scale. It was seen as far away as India, and it caused atmospheric pressure fluctuations that were measured as far away as Great Britain. Now, over the next few nights, the phenomena continued. Not the explosions. The explosions took place and did tremendous damage. But over the next few nights, all across Asia and all across Europe, the skies were aglow and were so bright that it was reported in London that people were able to read the newspaper outside in the street with no street lights just because of the brightness of the skies above them. When it was all over, some 10 million trees had been blown down in a circular pattern for a distance of about 20 miles in every direction. That was an enormous blast. Now, modern explanations by scientists have tended towards explaining all of this as a meteor that exploded as it was racing in for an impact with Earth. And because of the tremendous heat that built up around this meteor, and because of its composition, they say, the atmospheric pressure increasing as it was falling to Earth at thousands of miles an hour, they say it exploded about 3 miles above the surface of the Earth. But there are a couple of problems with that theory, as I think you will see very, very quickly. First, and I'm going to read you some witness testimony from people who saw what happened, and you will understand from their testimony why the idea that this was a meteor that exploded above the Earth doesn't really seem to be the proper explanation. First of all, we know that the meteor, if that's what it was, did not impact the Earth And here's the problem. It's sort of a dilemma, a paradox, if you will. We know that it did not impact the Earth because right at the epicenter of this explosion, where the meteor would have struck, right where the meteor should have been, where it should have struck, there should have been a huge crater. Now, this really had to be a big, big crater in order for the seismic instruments to have registered a 5.0 on the Richter scale, in order to create an explosion that the light of which could be seen as far away as India. This would have been an enormous crater. Well, there's no crater. And in fact, right at the epicenter of the explosion, all the trees were left standing. They were not burned, and they were not blown down. But for 20 miles in every direction, all the trees were just laid over, just blown down. For 20 miles in every direction, there was destruction of unparalleled and unprecedented proportion. Remember, this was a 5-megaton blast. Remember, this was 1,000 times more powerful than the blast from the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima at the end of World War II. Imagine Hiroshima not being one bomb, but 1,000 of those bombs. That's what happened at Tunguska. Now, the second problem. First problem is there's no crater where there should be, an enormous crater. So we know that the meteor, if that's what it was, did not impact the Earth. So did it explode in the air 3 miles up, as modern scientists say? Well, the problem, the biggest problem with that, as the witnesses gave their stories, is that, well, there are a lot of problems, but one big problem with it is that the column of light was not coming from the sky to the ground, but was going from the ground to the sky. It was rising from the Earth. Now, remember, whatever it was, at the epicenter, the trees were undisturbed. So what could it have been? Well, it could not have been a meteor or an asteroid or a comet slamming into the Earth, because there's no crater where there should be an enormous crater. So it wasn't that. It would not appear that it was a meteor or comet or asteroid exploding 3 miles above the Earth's surface, because the flash of blue light, the column of blue light, did not come from the sky to the ground, but went from the ground to the sky. Now, what I'd like to do is read to you some of the eyewitness reports here, and then we're going to get into some of the information about the new developments. As I say, there has been a new development in this that I think is enormously important. When you put what we're going to discover with these eyewitness testimonies, I think you will see that even though what we are going to discover may seem a little bit out there at first, it seems to fit what the witnesses experienced better, far better than what modern science has been using as an explanation. Now, this testimony is from someone named Semenov, as recorded by Leonid Kulik's expedition in 1930. Okay? Now, you need to understand this region of Tunguska is just so remote that no scientific expeditions went there to explore and to try and figure this out for about 20 years. They couldn't get it all together and get there. There are no roads into this area. Even today, there are no roads into this area. You can get there by helicopter, by boat, by trekking very arduously through swamp, but it's just too remote. All right. In 1930, the first expedition of scientists into the area recorded this testimony from someone named Semenov. And I quote, "At breakfast time, I was sitting by the house at Vannevara Trading Post, which is 65 kilometers south of the explosion. For those of you who use miles instead of kilometers, that's about 40 miles. And he said he was facing north. I suddenly saw that directly to the north over Onkul's Tunguska Road, the sky split in two and fire appeared high and wide over the forest." Semenov, there's a note here that says he pointed to where up into the sky where he saw this happening, and they recorded that it was at about 50 degrees up, according to an expedition note. "The split in the sky grew larger, and the entire northern side was covered with fire. At that moment, I became so hot." Now, remember, this is 40 miles away. "I became so hot that I couldn't bear it, as if my shirt was on fire. From the northern side, where the fire was, came strong heat. I wanted to tear off my shirt and throw it down, but then the sky shut closed and a strong thump sounded. And I was thrown a few yards. I lost my senses for a moment, but then my wife ran out and led me to the house. After that, such noise came as if rocks were falling or cannons were firing. The earth shook, and when I was on the ground, I pressed my head down, fearing rocks would smash it. When the sky opened up, hot wind raced between the houses, like from cannons, which left traces in the ground like pathways, and it damaged some crops. Later, we saw that many windows were shattered, and in the barn, a part of the iron lock snapped." Okay, so here's someone who is describing not only seeing, but hearing and then feeling what took place at Tunguska, 40 miles away from the blast. This one is a report that this is a report that happened July 2nd, 1908. So this is just a few weeks after the event, and this happened in this was printed in Sibir newspaper on the 17th of June. Now remember, on our calendar that's the 30th of June. On their calendar it was 17th of June. On the 17th of June, and this says around 9 in the a.m., but all of the other witnesses, everything kind of put it at 7:14 to 7:17, "we observed an unusual natural occurrence." Boy, did they. All right, we'll finish this testimony when we come back. Don't go away. All right, welcome back. We're talking about Tunguska this evening, and we're talking about this most amazing thing that happened, and no one really has it figured out yet. Nobody really has the answer yet. and there have been new developments. I had just begun reading to you this report. It was in Sabir newspaper, July 2nd, 1908. On the 17th of June, around 9 in the a.m., and as I told you, best estimates are that it was 7:14 to 7:17 a.m., we observed an unusual natural occurrence in the North Karolinski village, which is 200 verst, that would be 130 miles, north of Kerensk. The peasants saw to the northwest, rather high above the horizon, some strangely bright, impossible to look at, bluish-white heavenly body. That's different, isn't it? Listen closer. It says, which for 10 minutes moved downwards. The body appeared as a pipe. In other words, a cylinder. The sky was cloudless. Only a small dark cloud was observed in the general direction of the bright body. It was hot and dry. As the body neared the ground, the bright body seemed to smudge and then turned into a giant billow of black smoke, and a loud knocking, not thunder, was heard, as if large stones were falling or artillery was fired. All buildings shook. At the same time, the cloud began emitting flames of uncertain shapes. All villagers were stricken with panic and took to the streets. Women cried, thinking it was the end of the world. Now, the reporter now takes over and gives his views. The author of these lines was meantime in the forest about 6 versts or 4 miles north of Kerensk and heard to the northeast some kind of artillery barrage that repeated in intervals of 15 minutes at least 10 times in Kerensk. In a few buildings in the walls facing the northeast, window glass shook. See, now this doesn't sound at all like a meteor coming in and exploding 3 miles above Earth, does it? What we have is a blue cylinder that's coming towards the ground, so bright, it's bright blue, and so bright it was hard to look at. It took about 10 minutes, and it went all the way to the ground. They heard, instead of one impact, they heard what sounded like an artillery barrage, or perhaps sounded like huge stones, huge rocks falling. And then they saw a billow of smoke, and they heard this artillery, some sort of artillery barrage, they said, that repeated in intervals of 15 minutes, at least 10 times. Think about this now. Every 15 minutes, 10 times, is the sound of this artillery barrage. Now, this person was, the villagers that are reporting this, that's reported in this newspaper article, the villagers are 130 miles north of Kerensk. This reporter is approximately 4 miles north of Kerensk, closer to the explosion, and the reporter is saying that it sounded like a giant or a big artillery barrage of some kind, and it happened every 15 minutes, and it repeated about 10 times. That doesn't sound like a meteor that exploded 3 miles up. And a meteor does not generally, at least I've never heard of one, that looks like a cylinder, and that is glowing blue, so bright that you can't look at it. and takes 10 minutes to get to the ground. All right, on the in the Krasnoyarsk newspaper, July 13th, 1908. I don't know if I can even say this one. Kazimskoye Village. On the 17th of June, an unusual atmospheric event was observed. This one says at 7:43 a.m., the noise akin to a strong wind was heard. Immediately afterward, a horrific thump sounded, followed by an earthquake which literally shook the buildings as if they were hit by a large log or a heavy rock. The first thump was followed by a second and then a third. Then the interval between the first and third thumps were accompanied by an unusual underground rattle, similar to a railway upon which dozens of trains are traveling at the same time. Afterward, for 5 to 6 minutes, an exact likeness of artillery fire was heard, 50 to 60 salvos in short, equal intervals, which got progressively weaker. 1.5 to 2 minutes, after 1.5 to 2 minutes, after one of the barrages, six more thumps were heard, like cannon firing, but individual loud and accompanied by tremors. The sky at the first sight appeared to be clear. There was no wind, no clouds. However, upon closer inspection to the north, where most of the thumps were heard, a kind of an ashen cloud was seen near the horizon, which kept getting smaller and more transparent, and possibly by around 2 to 3 p.m., completely disappeared. Now, that's some weird stuff, folks. That's just some weird stuff. Now, remember, I want you to take a look, for those of you who are watching on KSS-TV, I want you to take a look at a photograph that was taken of the damage done at the Tunguska blast site. What you're looking at, for those who are on radio, what we're looking at is a picture of the forest, and the trees are just all laid down. There are a few standing, charred, burned, but most of these trees are just all laid down, as if they were all just bulldozed over. They're not laid down in a big jumble. They're all just laid down. Now, what could have caused all of this? There are people, scientists, I watched one just before showtime, who say that a meteor or perhaps a small asteroid or a very large meteor exploded above the Earth about 3 miles up. But it doesn't, that explanation does not fit at all the eyewitness accounts. Now, the eyewitness accounts include seeing an object in the sky. It didn't look like a meteor. They said it looked like a cylinder or a pipe, and that it was bright blue, and that it took about 10 minutes to descend to the ground. But then it did descend to the ground. It went all the way to the ground, and there was an explosion. And there was a column of bluish white light that looked like another sun. And it didn't look like another sun. It was so bright that it would be like a second sun. Then there was a blast of a shockwave of wind so strong it knocked people off their feet 40 miles away. 40 miles away, people were being knocked down by the blast wave, by the shock wave. And, that's pretty amazing. Now, I want you to think about this. I want you to think about how much pressure, wind pressure, how much shock pressure it takes to be fatal to the human body. Now, this may surprise you. It only takes 12 pounds of pressure. 12 pounds of shockwave to be fatal. So that would mean that this shockwave had to be enormous in order to travel 40 miles and knock people to the ground, blew windows out of the buildings, shook the earth, caused across Europe, caused seismic instruments to register 5.0 on the Richter scale, created such an atmospheric pressure fluctuation worldwide that it was measured in Britain. And then for 3 days, the sky at nighttime all across Asia and all across Europe had a glow so bright that people could read outside without streetlights by the glow of the sky. What was it? Well, look, it could have been a meteor. I'm not an expert in this. And I'll have to say, I guess anything's possible. I suppose it's possible for a meteor to be a long bluish cylinder. I suppose it's possible for a meteor to be a long bluish cylinder that is glowing so brightly that people can't look at it. And I guess that's possible. But the two mysterious things here, in addition to those facts, are that, number one, there is no crater at the epicenter. And the trees at the epicenter were not laid over like in that picture that I showed you. The trees at the epicenter were standing and were not burned. They were not harmed. It was as if nothing happened. I suppose that anything big enough to cause that kind of a blast, anything, should have left a crater that was awesome. If it was caused by an impact, if all of that was caused by an impact from a meteor, asteroid, comet, or whatever. If this was a meteor that exploded 3 miles high, then I can understand why there would not be a crater. I can understand that. What I don't understand is how, then, could you have a blue column of bright light rising from the earth upward and then billowing out into flames so hot that 40 miles away the guy said, "My shirt felt like it was on fire." I mean, if it explodes up here, whatever it is going to do will be sent downward. Whatever forces in that explosion will be sent outward and downward, and if there was going to be a column of light, it should have gone down, but it didn't. It went up. That doesn't seem to fit either. Stand by for new news. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking about the Tunguska event. Happened in 1908. Okay, I hope that at this point I have sufficiently laid out what happened and why the eyewitness reports don't seem to support what modern scientists are saying about Tunguska. Now, all down through the ages, since 1908, down through the decades, there have been lots and lots of people who have put forth the idea that perhaps this was some sort of UFO event. I don't know what it was, but it seems pretty clear to me that it was not an exploding meteor. It seems pretty clear to me that it was not an impacting meteor. It was neither one. That, to me, seems pretty clear from the eyewitness testimonies. And there are some more. I may have a chance later in the show to read you some more of those, but those are good examples that explain why I don't think this is an exploding meteor. And I don't think it's an impacting meteor either. I don't know what it was, but I don't think those explanations work. And again, just to reiterate very quickly, I guess it could be a meteor if meteors are long cylinders that glow very, very bright blue, so bright you can't look at them. I guess it could be. But the explosion that took place, the eyewitnesses said it took place when it got to the ground. They watched it go to the ground. They did not see it explode in the air. And what they did see is the explosion when it got to the ground, whatever it was. They didn't hear it crash. That's not what they heard. But when it got to the ground, then there after that, it sounded like either artillery or lots of huge rocks falling, and then a big explosion and a column of blue light going skyward. So bright they couldn't look at it. Heat so intense that 40 miles away the guy thought his shirt was on fire. A shock wave so strong that 40 miles away it knocked people to the ground. In fact, we saw one report where it was 130 miles away. People were knocked to the ground. Now, that doesn't seem to fit what the scientists say. Well, there is a scientist who really took some risk here. This scientist is Dr. Yuri Lobvin, president of the Tunguska Spatial Phenomena Foundation. Dr. Yuri Lobvin, that's L-A-B-V-I-N, insists that an alien spacecraft sacrificed itself to prevent a gigantic meteor from slamming into the planet above Siberia on June the 30th, 1908. Now, I have to say, this doesn't actually seem to fit the eyewitness accounts either. No one saw an alien spacecraft intercept a falling meteor. There is eyewitness testimony of something in the sky that sounds like an alien spacecraft. A blue glowing cylinder. Remember that? That was in the Sabir newspaper. A blue glowing cylinder, so bright that it was hard to look at, that was descending toward the ground, and it took about 10 minutes to get to the ground. So that doesn't sound like it was like, you know, streaking down towards Earth. So there is eyewitness testimony of something that sounds a great deal like the cylinder UFO craft that get reported even today. But there is no eyewitness testimony that tells us that that thing intercepted a streaking, falling meteor and crashed into it. Maybe it did, but Lobvin says that's what he thinks. Dr. Lobvin says that's what he thinks. Now, there's some interesting things that Lobvin has turned up. In doing his exploration of the Tunguska area, Lobvin has found some amazing quartz crystal pieces. Now, these quartz crystal pieces in the Tunguska blast area are etched with strange drawings, as he describes them. One of the drawings, he said, it's etched into the crystal, is a drawing of a strange face. I wish he would be more specific about that. I don't have any idea what that means, but then, you know, we start imagining, well, it could be an alien face. Well, I wish he would tell us. However, I do happen to have, for those of you watching on KSS TV, the photograph that he's provided of the crystals. And he says they are etched with strange markings, and that if you put them all together like a big puzzle, it appears to be some sort of a map. These crystals all have holes in them, and they are quartz. They all have holes in them so that you could hang them all on a chain, hang them together on a chain. And those of you who are looking at the photograph that Dr. Lampvin has supplied can see that there are indeed some kind of strange etchings, markings, geometrical shapes on these crystals. He says that they also located something called ferrum silicate. And he said that doesn't occur, and you can't even make it on Earth. The only place you can produce it is in space. Now, back during the 1940s, the KGB went into this area, or actually sent an expedition into this area to do some exploration, try to find out what was going on. And it is reported that they came up with some big blocks of what looks like pieces of some kind of machinery or technology that they carted out of there, and nobody's ever seen it or heard from it since. Now, that's pretty easy to believe, because we know that the KGB made a lot of things disappear into the deep, dark black holes of classified information in the KGB. All of us, my audience is worldwide, so right now listening to me are people in at least 95 countries. All of our governments, your government in your country, all of them, do the same thing. They classify certain information, and it disappears from public view. And they do it for a number of reasons. Some people think they shouldn't ever do that. Some people think it's okay to do it all. Some people are in the middle and say some of it's okay, some of it should not be classified. But the point is, wherever you live on planet Earth, your government does the same thing. So it's not hard for us to believe that report. And there are several reports, by the way, about that. And that the KGB located at Tunguska in the blast area some pieces of what they considered to be alien technology and carted it away. It's never to be heard from again. Now, those crystals, Lampvin thinks, may be some sort of a navigational map, some sort of a, maybe because they're crystal, maybe part of an alien ship's navigational controls. Now, again, you know, that's reaching a bit. I can't say that that I see evidence for that, but explain the crystals. They don't occur naturally there, and as Lampvin says, we do not have the technology today to do the type of etching in these crystals that is there. So where did they come from? And where did this this ferrum silicate come from? I don't really know what that is, but he says it can't even be produced on Earth. You have to, if you're going to produce it, you have to do it in space. But there it is at Tunguska. So we have eyewitness reports that describe something very much like what we would call a UFO. And the events do not match what science is saying is the explanation. A little bit more when we come back. We'll open up the telephone lines for you. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we're talking about Tunguska. Let me just wrap up what I'm saying, and then I'd like to open up the telephone lines and see what you think about it. I think it's pretty exciting that there is a Russian scientist now stepping up and saying, you know what, I have to say, I don't see evidence for everything that he's saying, but I do see evidence to back up some of what he's saying. And he's saying, you know what, this was not an exploding meteor. This was a collision between a UFO and a meteor, and that he thinks it was done on purpose to save the planet from being impacted by this large meteor. All right, now, in 1998, there's a television series called The Secret KGB UFO Files. And this was broadcast on Turner Network Television. It referred to Tunguska as the Russian Roswell, and they claimed in this series that they claimed that a crashed UFO caused Tunguska and that debris had been recovered from the site. And that some of you probably saw that on Turner Network Television. So what do you think? What do you think about this Tunguska thing? I mean, it happened. You know, this is not one of those deals where you have to say, well, I don't know if I really believe that Tunguska happened. It happened. It happened, and the whole world shook. Everybody knew it happened. They didn't know what had happened for a long time, but they knew something happened. They measured it with seismic instruments. They saw the flash of light as far away as India. They measured the atmospheric pressure changes as far away as Britain. And all over Asia, all over Europe, the sky was aglow for several nights after this event. There are eyewitness accounts. There are newspaper reports. And those eyewitness accounts, those newspaper reports, describe something that I have a hard time sorting it out. It sounds like a nuclear blast, but none of the evidence on the ground shows that it was a nuclear blast. They describe something that sounds like a UFO, a glowing cylinder in the sky, bright blue, glowing in the sky, descending. At least it may have been going pretty fast, but it took 10 minutes to get to the ground. The eyewitness reports describe an explosion once it got to the ground. First, it sounded like either artillery or like big rocks falling. And you know what you could have, and this is purely speculation, you could have a cylinder-shaped UFO that is perhaps powered, as Bob Lazar talked about, Element 115, powered with something like that, which is, I would say, nuclear. Perhaps it was in trouble as it got to the ground. Perhaps its systems began exploding within the ship. That's the artillery fire. And then the reactor explodes, and you have the column of bright light. I don't know. I'm just speculating. I'm not really sure what to think about it, except that I can say that I don't think there is any possibility that this is an exploding meteor. These are called, these exploding meteors, by the way, are called bolides. And but look, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And some of you are scientists, and you can call and explain to me why it's a bolide. I do have some serious questions that I would like to ask you, and maybe you can provide the explanation. All right, now the telephone number is 602-539-9580 or 888-223-4599, 888-223-4599. Now that number, that second number that I gave you, that one is in fact toll free. All right? All right, let's see. We need to put that one on hold and take this one. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Debbie from Columbus.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi. By the way, it was good to see you last week and talk with you.
And so folks will understand, that was at the Ed Grimsley Conference. I got the video. I was going to show the video of my interview with you. I was going to show it tonight. Mm-hmm. But
how were you?
Well, right at the last minute, this information about Tunguska came. So I wanted to get this in. So we'll get all the videos in. All right, sorry to interrupt. What's on your mind?
Oh, that's my problem. I don't know. It's really hard to kind of decide what that is. There's a lot, what you say has a lot of truth to it. If it was a meteorite, the trees definitely would have been flattened in another picture that most people that have read about Tunguska and have studied have seen. Usually a meteorite will do something like that, especially at the impact site, and, you know, the trees would be lying down, but also if it, say, did plow into the ground or something, you would have an impact crater and things like that. You'd also have scorch marks and things like that when meteors do land. It's really hard to say. I mean, you know, it could be as that Russian scientist that you were talking about earlier mentioned. It could be, you know, possibly a UFO that collided with a meteorite to possibly prevent, you know, a catastrophe from happening in that region of Russia. It could be not necessarily a UFO that is from outer space. It could be a UFO that was, you know, manufactured here on Earth, and it could have, they could have been testing it, and there could have been some kind of a malfunction with it that caused
the... Yeah, but now remember, this is 1908.
Well,
this is 4 years before the Wright brothers fly.
Okay. Well, if I remember correctly, I think someone at the conference mentioned that there's the possibility that UFOs could have been, in, you know, I mean, could have been manufactured even before World War II. I mean, I'm just, again, like you, I'm just speculating. I'm just,
yeah, but
you know,
see,
thinking of different things.
This is before World War I.
True, but
9 years before,
that the Russians might have not had contact, might have had contact with aliens, you know, before World War I, too.
That could be.
I mean, I'm just, again, I'm just speculating.
It's pretty hard to know, but it's fascinating, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's very fascinating. It's very fascinating.
Debbie, thanks for the call. I got to move on.
Okay, Kev.
All right,
okay.
Thanks. All righty then. Yeah, well, look, you know, UFOs have been around for a long time. And, I mean, there are paintings from hundreds and hundreds of years ago that have UFOs in the paintings. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Well, we cannot hear that caller. Caller, I don't know what the problem is. I see you on the screen here. I see your call on the screen. The buttons are pushed and you're on the air, but we can't hear you. So if you will, give me another call. The telephone number is 602-539-9580 or toll-free 888-223-4599. Again, to the caller that I tried to bring online, keep trying. We'll try to get you up online, okay? 602-539-9580 or 888-223-4599. Also, if you are outside of the USA, you're outside of Canada, you may use our flash message feature. Just go over to my website and scroll down, and you will see where it says flash message. But if you're in the USA or you're in Canada, you need to use the telephone. I even pay for the call. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Trey in Louisiana.
Hi, Trey.
Hey, Kevin. Yeah, it's funny y'all mentioned that a conference y'all were at. Because I was thinking there's a chance, now that we know a little bit from Ed Grimsley, that this could have been maybe one of them that was just, you know, sank through. Kind of like we've had all kind of crashes, and maybe it was just a battle, and one of them didn't get burned up in the atmosphere, or possibly was part of the engine that runs one of these ships, and that was maybe the cylinder object they saw falling from the sky was part of the ship. And maybe it was run by, like you were talking about, you know, whatever element that was, and who knows. But, you know, I can't say it wasn't a meteor, but the description of everything around it doesn't sound like a meteor. And if it was that big of a meteor, there was no impact point. So that's why I say it's that's not even arguable, I don't believe. I mean, don't you have to have, like you said, an impact center for it to be a meteor?
Well, if it impacts, and it's going to cause a crater, and to be big enough to cause 5.0 on the Richter scale, measured all across Europe, if you have something that impacts and does something that big, you're talking about an enormous crater, and there's not one. But, you know, Trey, here's what I can't figure out. Let's say that it was not a meteor. Let's say it was a UFO. And it somehow makes a troubled landing. It doesn't crash. Okay, so now we don't have a crater. But then there is this explosion, and the explosion is measured all across Europe, 5.0 on the Richter scale. 40 miles away, people are knocked to the ground. 130 miles away, people are knocked to the ground. That's big. You would still, you think you would, if it's sitting on the ground and does that, you would think there would still be a big crater at the epicenter. But there's not. The trees right in the center of all this are standing. They were not burned and they were not knocked to the ground.
Yeah, and the fluorescence, the remnants of whatever exploded in our atmosphere was probably what the glow they saw until it cleared out and thinned out. Maybe that's what that glow was, because the blue, you know, the colors they saw, and then the explosion, the blue light.
Yeah, but now when you say exploded in our atmosphere, let's be clear, it exploded on the ground.
Okay, exploded on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I still think it was probably not a spacecraft crashing, because we've had those happen, and they've shown that they just crash, and most of the time. But you know, that's whenever they're all in one piece. If one was blown to bits and some of it, you know, made it through into our atmosphere, well, then they wouldn't be controlling it if it's, you know, a giant engine falling down with all the liquid inside of it or something.
Have you seen the movie Angels and Demons?
No, but I'm looking forward to see what they're talking about and if they're going to talk about what I think they're going to talk about.
Well, in that movie, part of the plot is someone stealing a canister of antimatter, and they're going to blow up the whole Vatican with the antimatter. All right, what if this, see, antimatter does exist, and they do have it. I've seen it on television, the laboratory where they have it, and they keep it suspended electronically so that it doesn't touch matter. But it's a very, very small amount. All right, what if this is an actual antimatter craft, or as you said, maybe part of, maybe it's one of the engines, and it's antimatter. And
that's a very good point.
When it malfunctions and gets to the ground and then begins to come into contact, maybe in series things are beginning to break down inside the craft, and so you hear pop, 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 sounding like artillery, and then the big canister of antimatter gets cracked open, and you have the big explosion. Now, that might work.
Well, that sounds plausible, and it's funny you mention that, because my dad, that's the first thing he said a couple of years ago back when we saw the special that you're talking about, was he thought maybe some antimatter somehow got through or something and got to the atmosphere. And so, you know, that's always possible. But now that we know, because you think about it, now that we know, or we think we know, that there's a battle going up there, if there's a battle going on now, well, odds are it was probably going on in 1902, because 100 years to us might seem like a lot, but it probably isn't to someone else. At the time, it probably isn't the same, measured quite the same as far as length and considering how long something is.
Yeah.
So maybe that the battle's going on then, too.
Could be. Trey, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you again.
All right, thanks, Kevin.
All right, bye-bye. All right, folks. Yeah, what about that? What do you think? Is it antimatter? Now, some of you scientists need to call. Maybe I'm not challenging you. It's not like I want to take you on. I want you to answer some questions and help me understand this, and I'm serious about that. How can a bolide explode above the earth and have the column of fire come from earth skyward? I don't understand that. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Avi from New Jersey.
Okay, Avi, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a great show. Really interested in this sort of thing. I remember reading something about the Tunguska, and I was thinking about the. Are you familiar with the Tesla's death ray?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, and you know, I've read that maybe there's a connection there, but I mean, it's. I don't know.
Okay, you're saying that maybe this thing that happened in Tunguska was actually Tesla's death ray, and that caused it, right?
Well, I don't really know. I'm not a scientist either.
No. But I'm that's what you're suggesting, that it maybe that's a possible answer, right?
I'm thinking maybe. I mean, there's a lot of things Tesla invented that wasn't given a lot of attention, but I mean, it could have also, after those photos you showed of those rocks with the iron silicate, that's pretty really interesting. I never heard of those.
Yeah, this is the first time that I have heard about those. Now, just for clarification, those are quartz crystals. Okay. The other thing that he said they found was something called ferrum silicate, which does not exist on Earth and cannot be manufactured on Earth. Okay, so, but those are quartz crystals that were in that picture. Now, what do you think about the? I mean, could you see any etchings on those crystals?
I did see the photo you showed earlier. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It looked like triangles.
It does, doesn't it? And I can see one sort of rectangle that's sort of leaning to the right in one of the crystals. And I can see some triangles and other things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Could be ancient, but it could also be from the sky. I mean, anyway, I'm thinking also about, I can't remember now. It'll come to me after the call.
Okay.
But,
Well, Avi, thank you for the call. Let me ask you this. Do you think that it is, that Tunguska is the result of an exploding meteor? Do you see any possibility of that?
Not really. I mean, those tree rings, I'm still reading up on the meteor stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
Well, you can look up some of those eyewitness testimonies, people who actually saw what happened. And what they describe doesn't seem to me that it could even be possible if it was an exploding meteor.
Do you know if there were any radiation? They said there wasn't any, right? Any
That's no one has ever detected elevated radiation, which is why I would suspect antimatter, because when antimatter comes into contact with matter, mm-hmm. you have an enormous and immediate release of energy as X-rays.
And I did see that Angels and Demons, by the way.
Oh, you did?
I did see it, yeah.
Yeah. well, you would have an immediate release of energy as X-rays.
Of course.
And tremendous heat and a shock wave. Okay.
What happened, yeah.
But what you wouldn't have is a crater. What you would have is the atmosphere. See, atmosphere is matter. It's molecules of all types of gases. That's the atmosphere. So if you had antimatter that was suddenly released in a large amount, what would happen is the matter, the atmosphere, coming into contact with the antimatter would suddenly explode. Okay, so it's the air actually exploding. And then you would have a huge amount of heat and shockwave moving outward, and it would move outward in all directions or in a circular pattern.
Well, a long-range spacecraft might have something like that on it. I mean, God, I don't know.
Yeah, or a blue cylinder that is coming down, takes 10 minutes to get down. Maybe it might.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, man, thanks for the call.
Thanks, yeah.
All right, very interesting. 602-539-9580 or 1-888-223-4599. That's the toll-free number. You may be outside of the USA. If you are outside of the USA and if you're outside of Canada, go over to my website. Scroll down, and you will see a link that says Flash Message. Okay? So if you scroll down and you see Flash Message, you can click that and send me a message if you're outside the USA or outside of Canada. And we do have some Flash Messages coming in, which we will get to momentarily. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hi, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Did you get my email?
I have not read email today, which is quite unusual. I've just been way too busy today to read the email.
Yeah, that package got returned to me. It said unknown.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll take care of that after the show. What's on your mind about Tunguska?
Yeah, I was wondering, can we put some timeline in, like, because Freeman Stratton had said that we were experimenting with nuclear power or maybe even anti.
All right, that was 1965. Tunguska happened in 1908.
How about the Barney and Betty Hill thing?
1960s.
Yeah, and then there was another one with a mother, daughter, and son incident that got burnt?
That would have been the late 60s, early 70s, I believe. I can't think of her first name. Her last name is Cash.
Yeah. I just kind of wonder if our military, if we could put a timeline, you know, in there and, you know, maybe one has something to do with the other.
No, our military, we were still floating battleships powered by coal and steam in 1908.
Okay. Yeah.
Hey, we've got a break. Do you want to hang on through the break, or does that about do it for you?
I just kind of add two and two.
And that's a good thing to do. Talk to you later. Thanks for the call. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. The telephone line is open, 602-539-9580, or toll-free at 888-223-4599. This is from the United Kingdom. It says, "Hi, Kevin. Some weeks ago, you talked about the Nazis in Argentina. I think you should contact Fabio Zerpa. He is an UFO investigator from Argentina who knows a lot about the technology developed by the Nazis after the war. In one of his books, he talks about the entrances to the center of the earth in the Andes region of North Argentina." Okay, and as that applies to Tunguska, you know, there is a theory that there... it's called the Inner Earth Theory or the Hollow Earth Theory. And some people think it's absolutely true. Some people think it's absolutely nonsense. And yet, we've had physicists here on this show who have said that the physics of a spinning sphere in space almost demand that it would be somewhat hollow, that there would be a great cavity, a big open space inside that sphere. It may have indeed a core, and it may be, you know, it may be iron, it may be molten, but between that and the underside of the crust of this planet, virtually every planet, there would be this big cavity. Now, I've had physicists on this show who have said that the physics of a spinning sphere in space virtually demand that all the spheres have these big hollow cavities. Now, along with that theory of a hollow earth is the theory that a lot of people have, and there are a lot of books that have been written about it, that inside there are civilizations. When I was a kid, one of my favorite old movies was Journey to the Center of the Earth. And it was the story, you know, it's science fiction, written by Jules Verne, the story of Arne Saknussemm and his journey to the center of the Earth, and then a later expedition that followed him, followed his notes, and took an expedition to the center of the Earth. Fascinating. I loved it. I still like it. I mean, I laugh at the special effects now, but it was really first class at the time. Okay, there are stories that a lot of people have seen UFOs coming and going in the polar regions. And then this very enigmatic report by Admiral Byrd after he led Operation High Jump, which was an expedition, the largest naval expedition ever undertaken up until that time, and maybe still the largest. There may not be anything that has beaten it, but up until that time, certainly, it was the largest naval expedition ever done, and they went to Antarctica. And they were supposed to be there for about 6 months. The expedition was over in about 6 weeks. A newspaper in South America, I believe it was in Chile, reported that Admiral Byrd made the statement to them that the next war that the world has to fight will be against machines that can fly from pole to pole at incredible speeds. And this is right after he came, he had not even yet returned to the United States after Operation High Jump. They left Antarctica after about 6 weeks, and they came to South America. This is before he then returned to the United States. So you add all that together, and, you know, there is the possibility when you look at Tunguska that maybe what we're calling a possible UFO here may not be extraterrestrial but interterrestrial. And, you know, we talk about that theory quite often on this show. A lot of people bring that up, that maybe it's not a whole thing, the whole thing of the UFOs is maybe not extra, but interterrestrial. So what do you think about this, and what do you think about Tunguska? 602-539-9580 or 1-888-223-4599. Or if you're outside the USA or outside of Canada, anywhere else in the world, those telephone numbers work, but you have to pay those international long-distance fees. So you, if you're outside of the USA and outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message, and I'll read it, and we'll talk about it. Well, Dr. Yuri Lobvin is convinced, he's a Russian scientist, he's convinced that this was not a bolide, this was not a meteor that exploded 3 miles above the Earth. Now, I would like for some of you who are scientists, now we've got a vast audience, in that audience there are scientists, I would like, if you're a scientist, for you to call in and explain to me, if you think it's a bolide, or you think it's a meteor that exploded above the Earth, explain to me how that works. I don't understand how you could have that and then have the column of fire coming, and it's not just fire, it's a bright blue column of light coming from the Earth upward to the sky and then boiling out into flames. It would seem to me that if it explodes in the sky, you would have, if there's going to be a column of light, it would be from the explosion downward towards the Earth. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'd like to hear if it would, you know, if indeed it would come from the Earth skyward, just call and let us know and explain that to us. Now, I think all of you have some opinion about Tunguska. Tunguska is one of those events that is sort of like Roswell. It's sort of like the Philadelphia experiment. It's sort of like the Phoenix Lights. I mean, it's a big event that lots and lots of people have talked about over the years. You've read books about it. You've heard about it. And you've come to some conclusion as to what you think happened. I cannot think of a scenario that fits the evidence on the ground or that fits the eyewitness testimonies. As I said, if it was an impact, either an impact of a meteor or the impact of a spaceship, you should have a crater on the ground. I mean, if that indeed is what caused this massive explosion that rocked the world, you should have a huge crater on the ground, but you don't. So it's not an impact explosion. If this is a meteor that exploded 3 miles up, we should not have a column of intense blue light, intensely bright blue light rising from the Earth upward. And we should have, directly under that explosion, we really ought to have the epicenter destroyed as well as all of the trees that were destroyed. But the epicenter's not destroyed. It's like a little island of trees. And it's, when I say little, it's not really very little. I shouldn't have stepped off into this. I'm thinking it was about 8,000 acres of trees that were left alone. And then beyond that, for 20 miles in every direction, the trees are just blown over. They're just laid down. And we really should not be seeing that if we had an explosion right above it 3 miles up, and it's going to wipe out trees for 20 miles in every direction. It ought to wipe them out in the epicenter as well. So we don't really see that, do we? I don't know what to think about this. Maybe you've got some opinion or speculation, or beyond that, maybe you've got some kind of explanation. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Brent. I'm calling from the kitchen.
Where is your kitchen located? Wyoming?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I remember hearing that the same time that the Tunguska thing was going on,
yeah,
Tesla was experimenting with an energy beam.
Yeah.
And he had it pointed in that direction when the thing happened. And after that, he got so shook up, he didn't do it anymore. He didn't know if it was him or a combination of elements or his energy beam or what. He just never went back to that beam.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard that too. And another caller brought that up as well. Now, Brent, let me ask you something. Have you read about the, I mean, you've read some articles about this, or maybe it was in a book or something that you read?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Okay. What? How did that thing work? I mean, because, you know, here's, he was here in the United States, Tesla was,
mm-hmm.
and this is in North...
Russia.
Well, it's in North...
Siberia.
Kind of north, just a little bit west of North Central Siberia. How would he have gotten the beam to hit the ground there?
I'm not saying it was a beam. What I'm thinking is possibly it may have hit the meteor and destroyed it above the ground, because it might have... I don't know if his energy beam had enough power to go straight out into space, or if it would arc with the magnetic force of Earth planet or what. But if it was pointed in that direction... See, the story I heard is that when he was working with it, initially just practicing with it, an owl flew in front of it and got vaporized. And he tested once more after that, and that's when the Tunguska thing happened.
Yeah, but now we have to explain the large, blue, intensely bright cylinder that was descending.
So what I'm thinking is that he may have, if Tesla's beam did do that, he may have hit the spacecraft or whatever it was that was trying to intercept the meteor, and he ended up so much that he exploded as well.
Well, here's another thing. I don't even think there was a meteor involved at all, Brent. And the reason I don't is because they didn't find any pieces of it. Even if it exploded, you ought to be finding little chunks of it all over that area, and they haven't. And it's been intensely searched.
Okay, so maybe he just inadvertently shot down a cylindrical spacecraft.
Now, see, that is why I love to open the telephone lines, because that is something I had not considered. And you folks always make me think, okay, now, do you have a theory, Brent, as to how you could have that massive explosion and the epicenter of the explosion is not disturbed?
The epicenter of the explosion, have you ever, I don't know exactly how big the epicenter is, but...
About 8,000 acres.
8,000 acres?
Yeah, and it was not disturbed. The trees are okay. They're standing up. Nothing wrong. Can you hang on through the break?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, hang on. We'll be back, folks. Brent, you'll hear music. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach, and we have on hold with us Brent from Wyoming, And Brent, are you still with me?
Yep.
Okay.
Now, what I may be mistaken, but I think I've heard somewhere that if an explosion happens above the ground, the area directly below that will be undisturbed, but the circumference will be flattened.
Okay, but then what about the column of blue light and the eyewitnesses saying they saw that and smoke rising from the ground, not from the sky?
Column of blue light, let's say Tesla's beam hit the cylindrical UFO and it started heating up.
Okay, but it hit it in the air. And the explosion, according to the eyewitnesses, did not take place until this thing got to the ground.
Let's just say Tesla's... This is all speculation and theory.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say Tesla's beam disabled it enough that it crashed. And then it exploded when it hit the ground.
Okay, but then you don't have an explosion in the air that accounts for the island of undisturbed ground.
This is true. I have no idea.
You see what I'm saying? When you put all of it together, none of it makes sense. I don't know of any technology nor any natural occurrence that can produce the effect that is very definitely the effect that was on the ground.
It's a directed blast, and I have no clue what would do it.
It is weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Yep.
All right. 602-539-9580 or toll free at 1-888-223-4599. Or if you're outside of the USA and outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message, which I will be more than happy to read on the air. But you got to do it fast because we're running out of time. If you're going to call, you got to do it fast. You see, the evidence on the ground and the evidence of the eyewitnesses doesn't match any type of natural occurrence that I can think of. Nor does it match any type of technological explosion that I can think of. Now, look, I understand about directed blasts, okay? This may surprise you, but this is true, and this is not classified information. You can take some plastic explosive, I won't tell you what kind. Some of you know, but you can put it on a door. Just put a circle on the door with this plastic explosive, you know, like a stream of toothpaste, and take some poster board. And all you have to do is fold that poster board into an angle like this and tape it over the top of that, all around it, and all the blast from that plastic explosive will go through the door. None of it will come back towards you. It doesn't take much to direct a blast. But how do you direct a blast so that it cuts a donut? The stuff in the middle where the hole would be is not a hole. It's undisturbed. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Rick from Kentucky.
Hi, Rick.
I've been giving it about an hour and 45 minutes of thought while you've been going over this, and possibly, this is just a theory, what if it was one of these battles between two alien species, and one was airborne, and one had a base in Tunguska, a remote area of Siberia where they could stay hid, and the one on the ground is firing at the one in the air, fires some type beam at it. And the only thing I can come up with for the explosion is possibly the first thing that happened when it was hit is that it imploded. If you have an implosion, it goes in first and then out, and you could possibly have a barren area, if it was off the ground, you could possibly have a barren area directly underneath it. I don't know.
Okay.
Just theory.
Possible. Now, you know what? First of all, we'll have to do this real quick, but you were at Ed Grimsley's UFO Skywatch conference. You looked through the night vision goggles. Did you see UFOs?
Absolutely.
Okay.
No doubt about it.
All right, now back to Tunguska. This event, this incident, is about 40 miles to the northwest of where this took place, is Lake Baikal, which is the deepest freshwater lake on the planet, and there are all kinds of reports of USOs, UFOs that fly in, go under the water, and stay submerged under that lake. And that's 40 miles away. Now, you're talking about a base. Maybe that's exactly what happened.
That's the only theory I could come up with after listening for an hour and 45 minutes. It's, you know, there's a lot of theories, but that's the only one that kind of fits what happened, the beam shooting upward, possibly striking whatever was attacking from above. And but the implosion is the only thing I can come up with that would cause an explosion, a devastation like that, leave an area in the center. I did see a movie on the History Channel a couple years ago, and they mapped out the damage and tried to recreate it with matchsticks on a table, and the only way they could do it was with an air burst up about 2 miles above the ground, and it left a butterfly-shaped pattern with the center remaining standing.
Okay, but the problem I have with that theory is that the eyewitnesses said the explosion did not happen in the air. It happened when it was on the ground. That's the eyewitnesses. And then they talk about this column of intensely bright blue light that shot skyward and then boiled out into flames, fire. Okay, so the only way that I can buy that this was an airborne explosion is, first of all, I have to discount the eyewitnesses entirely, and then I have to hear a scientific explanation for how you have the intense column of blue light coming from the ground upward instead of the other way.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Also, I'd like to say, that documentary I watched, they did say that in all the searches of the area, they have not found one piece of a meteor.
That is true.
There was no meteorite.
But, I tell you, I just looked at the clock. We're almost out of time. But look, they've not found any pieces of meteor, but there are reports that the KGB carted technology out of there. So, I don't know, but we've got a Russian scientist that's saying that there was a UFO involved, and we've got eyewitnesses describing what we call a UFO, and this was before the Wright brothers flew. So, I've got to say there was something anomalous in the sky, and it was not natural. It was not a meteor, and don't know what it was. Rick, thanks for the call. I've got to run because we're almost to the end of the show, and I appreciate so much your call. All right, folks, we've just about come to the end of the show. Let me tell you that tomorrow night's guest is going to be well worth listening to. Have you ever heard of the Rosetta Stone? You know what the Rosetta Stone was, right? Well, he's going to be talking about the Rosetta Stone of UFOs. And then on Friday night, we're going to have Dr. Bruce Maccabee with us. It's going to be a fantastic rest of the week, and you don't want to miss any of this, all right? And, of course, we've got a great week lined up for you next week. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.